Welcome to the ULM Forum, a conversation about higher education here at the University of Louisiana at Monroe. I'm Jay Curtis. My guest today, Dr. Bill McCown, is the new Interim Associate Provost for Academic Affairs. Welcome to KEDM again, and welcome to ULM Forum.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you here. A little bit about you stepping up and working in Academic Affairs, close relationship with the Provost's Office, but close relationship with the faculty, too.
Absolutely. It's an interim position. I don't anticipate being there forever. It is, let's put it this way, my training as a clinical psychologist, which is what I do for a living, comes in great use there because there's lots and lots of small little crises day to day. The only thing that I can say that I've ever seen anything like it is when I used to work in a crisis center, and when the phone would ring, there would be something disastrous. Well, it's not quite as bad from a mental health viewpoint, but when the phone rings, it might be 50 chairs are missing, or there is a lock that can't be open, or some disaster about a class somewhere. A lot of things need constant attention, and it gave me a whole big respect for people who are at the top and on the sixth floor.
Well, you're also here as a clinical psychologist in that September is Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Awareness Month, if I can get that all out at once.
Yes.
As a professor of psychology here at ULM for 15 years, you're also a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in teen, child, and adult addictions, author of 7 books and over 100 professional publications.
That's wow. Right.
Also, news of note, you became a first-time father at 50.
At 50, right. So a shout-out to my son, Gavin. Hopefully he's listening.
Okay, first of all, what is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder?
Well, attention deficit disorder was actually described in biblical times, believe it or not. And it, during the 16th, 17th, 18th century, was described. It was described in some of Shakespeare's plays and some other literature at the time. Around the beginning of the 20th century, it made its way to the medical literature and used to be thought of as what was called minimal brain damage or minimal brain dysfunction. And these were people primarily thought to be boys who were not able to control their motor behavior. They were hyperactive, to use that good term of the 80s and 90s. Since then, we realized that that's really just about half of the picture. With that also goes an inattention, and boys tend to be more hyperactive. Girls with the disorder seem to be more inattentive. It used to be thought that once we hit 17 or 18, we all outgrew it if we had the disorder. It's not the case. Between 60 and 80% of people still have symptoms as adults. And as they get older, the symptoms tend to drift more towards the inattentive spectrum. And these are people that we frequently see in our college classes.
The difference between ADHD and ADD.
People throw the terms around with some confusion, but really they're the same disorder.
Going into the background of that, where does it come from? What you mentioned that it's genetic.
Great question. We know that genes are important. Sometimes people would say it was the way people were raised or it was due to having a bad mother. None of that at all. Inconsistency in parenting doesn't seem to affect it at all. Genetics seem to influence the tendency. They certainly aren't the only cause. There are other factors, and for reasons that we do not understand, ADHD has been increasing, I'm not going to say epidemically, but substantially since the early 1900s. The World Health Organization, which is, you know, a major player and an impartial assessor, believes that there are individual differences in countries' rates of ADD or ADHD. You can use the words interchangeably. But between 4 and 7% of the population has the disorder. Is there something in the environment that triggers it, or does it have to do with the multitasking that we're doing, or we don't know. A recent study that I think is very good said that pesticides may contribute. So the field is evolving very quickly.
And you mentioned that it's been on the increase since the early 1900s. It may be something that has to do with being able to detect it as well.
Right. And a lot of academic debates concern just that. Are we detecting it better, or are we actually seeing more of it? And the answer is probably yes.
The answer is both.
Yes.
Well, you see also a lot of controversy in the media about treating ADHD.
Right. And one reason is because the treatments, which have been known since the late 1930s, the first line of medical treatment involved stimulants and drugs that typically would stimulate or be used for recreation for people without ADHD, with young adults like Ritalin, have almost a paradoxical effect on people who have the disorder. It tends to slow them down, make them less impulsive, give them the ability to concentrate. It's somewhat paradoxical, but it's been seen since the 30s. We're not quite certain why that's the case. My opinion, if these drugs are used under a physician's supervision, they are pretty much entirely safe, safer than many other medications that, people use for other disorders. There are other treatment options. For medications, there are at least two other classes. Certain types of antidepressants work very well, particularly for adults. And certain blood pressure medicines that change neurotransmitters can work well on kids and adults. And there's some time-released versions of those that are making it to commercial market now.
What are some of the keys? Because I think most educators can tell you some kind of a story about a child who had been diagnosed and who was ridiculously over-medicated.
What
are some of the keys to getting that right, as far as being able to curb some of the behavior and some of the principles that they exhibit, but also still allow them to function?
Observation, and observation in a variety of different settings. And for parents, what they have to do, I believe, is know their children. If you have ADHD or any disorder, and you're going to be different in a setting that's exciting compared to one that's, you know, rather dull. And so parents need to observe their kids in a variety of different situations. Take notes. There are actually several different scales that you can get on the internet for free. All you have to do is just go to the internet and look parent support group. You'll find everything that you need for ADHD. And they let you do self ratings or ratings of your kids and to hand to your physician or other healthcare professional.
And you also mentioned that girls present different symptoms than boys do.
Absolutely. And that is a problem. Boys tend to be easily identifiable because they tend to be more impulsive. Those are the kids that age 6 and 7 are climbing on the furniture, maybe burning something, and just generally having a good time but not able to cut it off. Whereas girls tend to, who have the disorder, tend to, not always, but tend to be a lot quieter. They have problems paying attention. Sometimes the teacher may label them as ditzy, as lazy, or even airheaded, and they don't get detected. And as people get older, we all tend to go in that direction if we have ADHD. So we'll see someone who's 30, 35, who has difficulty concentrating. They may have had a history of documented ADHD when they were younger, but they can't understand why they just can't pay attention.
I'm talking to Dr. Bill McGown. He's a professor of psychology here at the University of Louisiana at Monroe, about September as Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Awareness Month. Now, in the last several years, I've seen a shift more from the medication side and more toward the psychotherapy side. What's causing that, and what are some of the new techniques maybe that might be helping?
Well, that's a really, really good question. Up until a few years ago, there was no really good evidence that psychotherapy helped. And now we know that a particular type of psychotherapy called cognitive behavioral therapy that helps people focus can be very effective in getting people to the point where they don't need medication or can overcome their difficulties. I don't want to use the word naturally, but through other processes. Some people use holistic treatment, naturopathic treatment. If it works for you, great. It works for your kids. That's fine. I don't recommend it as a first line of treatment, but in some cases it does work. Some people claim that dietary changes work. Again, there's not a lot of evidence, but hey, if it works for you, great. Newer types of treatments such as biofeedback that actually teach a person to modify their brain waves have proven very, very successful in the short run. Now, short run meaning you have to keep them up and keep up the training, but you also have to take medication daily if you have the disorder. So they, if anything, they're less intrusive on a person than medication. Also, a new type of therapy that involves teaching children and adults how to focus, what to focus on, and providing memory training for shorter-term memory seems to be very effective, and hopefully we'll be getting a little bit more publicity in the next year or two.
So what happens to kids who don't have it treated? What happens in both in the school system but also into adulthood?
Well, they don't do well in school, and about 60% of the kids, 80% of the kids nationally don't make it through high school. And since we are one of the states that have a higher amount of ADHD, that's very, very sobering. What happens to a lot of these kids is they start identifying with the bad element or the wrong element. And then, as I told a parent recently, they don't just hang around the wrong element. They become the wrong element by a certain age. They look for rewards or reinforcements wherever they can get them. And usually those are outside of the classroom, outside of the traditional social structure. About 60 to 70% of people with untreated ADHD develop substance abuse problems, generally alcohol, but other substances. Many have driving problems, which is interesting. High history of accidents, very poor work history. Very few of these people succeed in college. Once they get in the employment sector, they just kind of bounce around from job to job. They have a tendency to have multiple marriages, multiple relationships. Their life just is not good.
How does it present itself in adults that's different from the way it is, what you see in children?
In adults, you will often have someone who has outgrown, particularly for a male, the impulsiveness, but they may have the problems with attention. They may have problems with anger. With women, they may have some of those as well, but it tends to be more attentional issues, more not being able to concentrate. People of both genders tend to have problems with organization. That's why college is such a diagnostic indicator for some of these people. They do really well when they're at home and everything is structured, but when they're in an environment where they have to structure themselves, things do not go well. They tend to procrastinate more. They tend to have difficulty monitoring their own behaviors. They may be very creative, but they can't complete a project. They certainly can't complete a writing assignment because they tend to go on and on and on. And life is very, very difficult for them. There are frequently people that when they have, an academic task, they will plan excessively to do it. But when it gets down to actually doing it, they'll run out of time.
So you've done a lot of research, though, already in procrastination and ADHD. Tell us about what that's showing now.
Well, there definitely seems to be a link, and not necessarily between people who, of people who have the diagnosis of ADHD, you know, well over 95% have problems with chronic procrastination. And when they get better, either through medicine or other treatments, the procrastination tends to decrease. Now, people who have procrastination, on the other flip side of the coin, there's a high degree of undiagnosed ADHD. And if not the complete disorder, what we call threshold symptoms, kind of a sub thing going on, they almost have the disorder and almost qualify for it. And if they get treated through medication or through other methods, then the procrastination tends to go away.
What would some of those threshold symptoms be if I knew somebody who was like this?
Interrupting other people when they're talking, inability to follow a conversation without zoning out or thinking about what you're going to do next, frequently drumming on the table, jumping from one topic to another, scribbling, making frequent lists, especially when other people are talking, misreading social cues. There's a list of about 18 things that the World Health Organization has found and that are, you can get them on any website that deals with ADHD. They're very helpful.
Dr. Bill McGowan, who should parents be turning to, both parents and coworkers, family members be turning to for that kind of evaluation?
For kids, the first person I would look to is a healthcare professional pediatrician. A few years ago, pediatricians were not well trained in this area, and now they very much are. For young adults and adults, turn to your healthcare professional also. They have received a great deal of training through continuous education, and they know a whole lot more than they did a few years ago.
Dr. Bill McCown is the professor of psychology at the University of Louisiana at Monroe. September is Awareness Month for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. He's a licensed clinical psychologist and also the new interim associate provost for academic affairs. Dr. McCown, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Comments or questions about the show can be emailed to woodard@ulm.edu or send them to ULM Forum, care of KEDM Public Radio, 250 Stubbs Hall, 401 Bayou Drive, Monroe, Louisiana, 71209. Podcasts of the ULM Forum are available online at kedm.org in the listening room.